gallant American women. This is the story of women who have helped to develop the American way of life.
Soldiers of destiny, mothers of might, soulmates of history. Women whose names are written large upon the honor rolls of our nation's greats. Women courageous who have served and sacrificed, worked and dreamed, pioneered and persevered. Women whose names, deeds, and claims to fame have often been forgotten.
This is their story. Three centuries of women whose deeds are rooted deep in our past and whose influence will reach far into the future. The story of the pioneer women of today who are blazing the trails of tomorrow. The United States Office of Education and the National Broadcasting Company take pride in presenting the sixth chapter in this epic tale of women in the making of America. Today's story tells how the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged on account of sex. Women are people. Today, women are a power in the nation. They not only have the freedom of speech, thought, and assembly, they also have the right to vote and hold office.
Now, 150 years after the founding of the nation, of, by, and for the people, the national government admits that women are people. The story of women's suffrage goes back to the 17th century, when Margaret Brent, mistress of a vast estate in Maryland, demands suffrage, a vote, and representation.
In 1776, after the Declaration of Independence has been proclaimed, and the Continental Congress is in session to form an independent government, Abigail Adams of Massachusetts warns the Congress of a rebellion within the rebellion if the rights of women are ignored.
And in 1778, Hannah Lee Corbett from Virginia demands that justice be done to women.
The 19th century found women from Europe joining in the plea. Year after year, they continue to agitate for the suffrage, for the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in America. Other women, too, were claiming recognition for their rights.
1840. Lucretia Mott, America's ardent abolitionist, arrives in London as one of America's delegates to the first World's Anti-Slavery Convention. On one side of her sits her husband. On the other, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, wife of another American delegate. Together, they hear the chairman make an announcement.
It is the understanding of this convention that women shall not be admitted.
Well, did you hear that, Mrs. Mott? And after we've traveled 3,000 miles to get here.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. James Mott.
In the United States, women have freedom of assembly to gather with men at abolition meetings. My wife has been sent here as a delegate. She should at least be free to speak.
Yes, by all means.
Mr. Chairman.
Reverend Burnett.
This is a meeting to discuss the freedom of slaves, not of women. Women are not fit to handle such important affairs.
Oh, if only William Lloyd Garrison would come. He would defend our rights.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Boeing.
May I point out that the Commander-in-Chief of the armies and navies of Great Britain is a woman. Good Queen Victoria. I look upon this mixed delegation from the United States as one of the most interesting, the most encouraging, and the most delightful symptoms of our time.
Order, order.
Mr. Chairman, any student of the Bible knows that woman's subjection was divinely decreed when the Lord created Eve, subject to Adam.
Prove to me that the Bible sanctions the slavery of women, the complete subjugation of one half of the race to the other.
Good for George Bradley. Good for George Bradley.
Third. If there is no further discussion, we shall take a vote of the male members. Those in favor of excluding women...
Aye! Aye!
Those opposed...
No!
Then all women in this convention must be asked to repair to the balcony and sit behind the screen to await the arrival of our chief speaker, Mr. William Lloyd Garrison.
What an insult. After all women have done, Mrs. Mott, for the freedom of the slaves.
Apparently, the slaves aren't the only ones who need freedom, Mrs. Stanton. Is thee coming with me upstairs to the balcony?
Well, if I must. But when I get back to the United States, people are going to hear about this. I think we women have endured subjection long enough. It's time we demanded our rights.
And look who's coming down the aisle.
William Lloyd Garrison.
Yes, this, Mr. Chairman, about women being excluded?
The convention has voted, Mr. Garrison.
So that's your idea of liberty. Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid I have nothing of interest to say to abolitionists who harbor such a strange conception of the rights of human beings. So if you'll excuse me, I shall listen instead. I'll sit with the ladies behind the screen upstairs in the balcony.
The World's First Women's Rights Convention is meeting at Seneca Falls, New York. Called by four women, including Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, with James Mott presiding. While he introduces Mrs. Stanton to the audience, his wife pleads with her offstage.
And now, ladies and
please,
gentlemen...
Please, Lizzie, don't mention suffrage. But that's the master key, Lucretia, to open all other opportunities to women. Oh, they will make us ridiculous.
You know yourself that we can't accomplish anything in abolition or peace or temperance reform without the vote.
I will...
And so the women issued a declaration of sentiments based on the Declaration of Independence and launched the movement for attaining the civil, social, political, and religious rights of women.
People said a great deal about that first Women's Rights Convention. Husbands and wives argued, preachers ranted, editors blazed forth.
The men who join in the silly cry of brawling women are creatures of the rankest stamp. Contemptible abolitionists like Garrison, heretics like Horace Greeley and William Cullen Bryant. These men are all women's writers and preachers of such damnable doctrines it would make demons of the pit shudder to hear.
Hated, maligned, persecuted, the women's writers and the abolitionists marched together until dissension appeared in the ranks. Active in the women's wing, now was a woman with a determined chin and a stirring voice. While Elizabeth Cady Stanton forged the thunderbolts, Susan B. Anthony hurled them.
Gentlemen, I intend to tell them the power to make the laws is the right to which all other rights are secured. Women must be allowed to vote.
Please, Miss Anthony, you must use moderation.
Moderation? Would you tell a man whose house is on fire to give a moderate alarm?
But you're turning public opinion against us. The whole cause of abolition may be lost because it's tied up with women's rights. Don't you see, Miss Anthony, with the freedom of the Negro, women's rights are inevitable.
I wish I could be sure of that.
We'll promise it. If you'll drop the woman question and help us free the slaves, we'll help you win the vote. Well, is it a bargain?
All right, gentlemen, it's a bargain. No more talk of suffrage until we've freed the slaves.
All through the Civil War, the women held to their promise, turning their suffrage society into the Woman's Loyal League, defending the Union, petitioning Lincoln to abolish slavery. And as the smoke of battle cleared, they cheered the 13th Amendment to the Constitution.
Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States.
Now, gentlemen, how about us?
Sorry, Miss Anthony. This is the Negro's hour.
That's right. The Negro men come first. With us, It is a matter of life and death. Sorry, Miss Anthony.
Fourteenth Amendment to the Constitution. All persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens. No state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
The next amendment must include women.
Time after time, the woman's suffrage amendment has been pushed aside. But Susan B. Anthony...
Fellow members of the National Woman Suffrage Association, I believe that we already are enfranchised by the 14th Amendment, which says that every person born here is a citizen. If women are people, then we can vote. And I believe that we ought to put it to the test at the next election.
1872. In a barber shop at Rochester, New York, 15 women are waiting to vote. Among them...
My name is Susan B. Anthony.
But you can't vote, ma'am.
Why not? I'm a citizen.
But you're a female.
I'll go on back to the kitchen.
I demand my right to vote, whatever the consequences.
And 23 days later...
All right. I'll show you the consequences. In the name of the law, I arrest you for illegal voting.
Illegal voting? But that's unjust.
Come on, tell it to the judge.
I direct the jury to bring in a verdict of guilty.
Your Honor, I demand the justice of a fair trial.
Jury dismissed. It is the opinion of this court that Miss Susan B. Anthony has committed a crime. I hereby sentence you to pay a fine of $100 and all costs.
May it please your honor, I shall never pay a cent of your unjust penalty.
And Susan B. Anthony never paid that fine. Out in Missouri, another woman had put the vote to the test. Mrs. Virginia L. Minor. When she was accused of illegal voting... Her husband took the case to the Supreme Court of the United States.
In the opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States, women were not enfranchised by the 14th Amendment.
But out in the West, along the frontier where the pioneer American spirit of freedom had air to breathe, women were voting.
In Wyoming, where Governor Campbell had signed the first bill granting women suffrage in 1869.
In Utah, where Sarah Young had cast the first woman's vote in 1870.
And while Susan Anthony was testing suffrage in the East, a young girl out in Iowa was testing her father.
Why doesn't mother vote, too?
Well, you see, Carrie, women can't vote.
But why, father? How did men ever get to vote?
Well, I'll be switched. I don't know how they got it, Carrie.
Is it in the Constitution?
No. In fact, I believe men didn't all vote when our nation was founded. The men in Connecticut couldn't vote till 1842. I guess we just kept on asking for it till we got it.
Then the women should keep on asking, too. I know that I'm going to keep on asking till I get it.
And Susan B. Anthony kept on asking and leading the march toward votes for women. Every year she laid the woman suffrage amendment before Congress. Every year she saw it refused. And others kept on.
Elizabeth Cady Stanton, pleading openly for the rights of the common people, an American aristocrat who boldly called herself a Democrat.
Sojourner Truth, a Negro woman, pleading for the rights of the women of her race.
And now, out of the waste came two new leaders. Anna Howard Shaw, ordained woman preacher, and that girl from Iowa, Carrie Lane Chapman.
And back to the West we went to win more states for suffrage. I to South Dakota, Anna Shaw to Kansas.
Why should Kansas work for woman suffrage? Would you like to add 3 million more illiterate voters to those we already have?
The gentleman parts his hair in the middle, but he parts his figures on one side. There are today in the United States about 18 million women of voting age. Grant him the 3 million illiterates. Would you like to add 15 million intelligent voters to those of America?
Colorado grants woman suffrage in 1893.
Idaho in 1896. It was coming now, slowly. The thing they struggled for through half a century. Too late for the early pioneers, such as Lucretia Martin Lucy Stone, who had died without ever voting. Elizabeth Cady Stanton had retired at 73. Now, in 1900, Susan B. Anthony stood before the National American Women's Suffrage Association, the younger women at her side. Reverend Anna Howard Shaw and Mrs. Carrie Chapman Kett prepared to carry on.
You yourselves have chosen my successor. I present her to you. My ideal leader, Mrs. Carrie Chapman Catt.
Much has been accomplished since that first Women's Rights Convention met at Seneca Falls, New York, 52 years ago. Then, the few women who dared to speak in public were condemned. Now, the women most opposed to women's suffrage travel about the country making speeches to prove that woman's place is in the home.
Washington State grants woman suffrage in 1910.
California in 1911.
Kansas in 1912.
Oregon, Arizona. Carrie Chapman Catt, continue to plead.
And still we lay our amendment before Congress year after year. Gentlemen, that women should vote is fundamental to a democracy. No nation can exist half slave and half free.
No man can answer their arguments. But I'd rather see my wife in her coffin than live to see her vote. And I'd die myself before I'd vote in favor of that amendment.
Meanwhile, Susan B. Anthony had become a widely loved citizen. At a great testimonial dinner in Washington, following more than 50 years of her agitation for a full American democracy, leading men and women of the nation paid her honor. The gentlemen of the press insisted that she send for her famous little red shawl to grace the occasion. No red shawl, no report, they cried. But soon the women, tired of begging, began to parade for the vote. And so, down the avenues of our cities marched the suffragists, thousands strong, banners flying, bands playing. Along with them marched the men who were brave enough to face the jury.
Back from London came two young American college girls who had been jailed for joining the militant suffragists of England in their demonstrations, Alice Paul and Lucy Burns.
We ought to try those militant tactics here in the United States, Alice. We'd soon have things humming.
Yes, but let's try political tactics too, Lucy. What about those 4 million women out west who already have the vote? Why shouldn't they use their power in electing congressmen who will pass the amendment?
That's it. Why, maybe they could even influence the presidential candidate.
Theodore Roosevelt, progressive candidate, is in favor of women's suffrage.
Woodrow Wilson, Democratic candidate, is in favor of women's suffrage.
Amendment was barred by Congress. The women must win more power. They must use every right they've gained to win votes for all. 1913. In Chicago, a group of women lawyers pore over the Illinois Constitution.
Unless it specifically says that only men can vote for state and county offices and for president, too, why, we have that right.
And if we can persuade the legislature to let us use it...
250,000 women vote in Chicago election.
Sentiment in favor of woman suffrage doubles throughout the nation.
Illinois women vote to close more than 1,000 saloons.
Liquor interest strike increase anti-suffrage agitation.
1914, Montana and Nevada grant woman suffrage.
1917, the United States at war.
The Civil War had retarded the suffrage movement a full 10 years. This time the women would not give it up. Instead, they combined it with their war work. Carrie Chapman Catt serving on Wilson's Committee for the National Defense. And the militant suffragists, the Congressional Union, formed by Alice Paul and Lucy Burns.
It's 4 years now, Alice, since Wilson said he favored woman suffrage. And what has he done? If he'd only appealed to Congress to pass the amendment.
He'll never do that, unless we force him into it. Now is the time for militant tactics, Lucy. We must never let him forget us. We must picket the White House.
Women picketing the White House. Women from the age of 20 to 84. Their purple, white, and gold banners shouting their message.
Mr. President, how long must the women of the United States wait for the right to vote?
After the Civil War, we were told to wait. That was the Negro's hour, we were told.
Today, we are still waiting. Will you tell us that this is Europe's hour?
Women picketing. In January sleet, in April rain. Day after day, month after month, while a crowd gathers.
Mr. President, you say that you are fighting to make the world safe for democracy.
The United States isn't a democracy while 20 million citizens are denied the vote.
How long will we be denied a voice in a government which is conscribing our sons?
Rowdies attack pickets. Suffragettes arrested.
40 women sentenced to jail for obstructing traffic.
Alice Paul and Lucy Burns take hunger strike in prison.
Forcible feeding of suffragettes. Public enraged.
All women prisoners unconditionally released.
1917. New York grants woman suffrage.
1918. South Dakota. Michigan. Oklahoma.
Still the amendment is barred by Congress. Now, the National American Woman Suffrage Association, led by Mrs. Catt, approaches the president.
Mr. President, you who have proved yourself a miracle worker on many occasions may be able to produce another in Congress. The miracle of putting vision where there was none before.
September 30th, 1918. President Wilson addresses the Senate.
Gentlemen, both of our great national parties are pledged to equality of suffrage for the women of the United States. The people of Europe are looking to this great, powerful, famous democracy of the West to lead them to the new day which they have so long awaited. And they think that democracy means that all women shall play their parts in affairs alongside men and upon an equal footing with them. They have seen their own governments accept this interpretation of democracy. If we reject measures like this in ignorant defiance of what a new age has brought forth, of what they have seen but we have not, they will cease to believe in us.
Extra, extra, suffrage amendment lacks only 2 votes. Extra, suffrage amendment.
Women urging, pleading, entreating, using all their wiles to combat opposition. Women munition workers from Pennsylvania. Women farmers from Wisconsin. Women war nurses from every state in the Union. Women picketing the Capitol, lobbying among the senators.
Nagging. If you women would only stop nagging.
Well, I'm as much opposed to federal suffrage as ever. But I think I'll vote for it. My constituents want me to. I voted against suffrage in 1914. I can't change my principles. I feel obliged to make public speeches against it, ladies, but I will vote for it.
Congress passed the suffrage amendment, and it was referred to the states for ratification. Women lobbied in the state legislatures, and as Carrie Chapman Catt later said,
they appropriated our telegrams, tapped our telephones, listened outside our windows, attacked our private and public lives. I was flooded with anonymous letters, vulgar, ignorant, insane. I had heard of the invisible government. Well, I have seen it work,
and I have seen it sent into oblivion.
August 26, 1920. The climax of all the hard work.
19th Amendment to the Constitution. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged on account of sex.
Nineteen years have passed since our political democracy has been widened through the energy and devotion of gallant American women. And many of the ideas for which you worked have now been put into practice. But political democracy is merely the agent of civilization. The vote is a means, not an end. Today, you, the women of America, are an admitted political force. And your social ideas take on new importance. Now that you have the vote, what part can you, as women, play in building a nobler pattern of American life? What contribution can you make in helping to solve local, state, and national problems?
You have heard the sixth of a series of educational radio programs entitled Gallant American Women. Today's broadcast dealt with Women Are People, the story of women's struggle for the right to vote. Through the cooperation of the Columbia University Press, the complete script of this broadcast is now available. A list of good books to read and a schedule of coming programs are included in this publication. If you are a chairman or secretary of a group, you will find this material especially useful. It should help you organize meetings devoted to the theme of the program. The listings of future programs should help you schedule listening group meetings. For your copy, send 10 cents to Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. May I repeat? Send 10 cents to Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. Next week's program deals with laws and women. Gallant American Women, an NBC public service feature, is a series of dramatizations prepared and presented by the United States Office of Education, Federal Security Agency, with the cooperation of the Women's Division of the National Broadcasting Company, and with the assistance of the Works Projects Administration. Program supervised by Eva Hansel. Scripts by Jane Ashman. Historical consultants Mary R. Beard of the World Center for Women's Archives and Dr. Eugenie Leonard. Original music by Rudolf Schramm. The program directed by Philip Coyne.